You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Zach is straight up out of high school. He's one of the younger players that we've talked about before on this show. You know, one of the 19-year-old kids, I mean, but he's forsook college and is here in professional gaming. So it's a very interesting story for Zach. A really good conversation with him. So I hope you guys enjoy that. But before we get to Joe, the Grizzlies are not playing tonight, but the Pelicans are playing. They are most likely going to lose to the Hawks, which is good. Well, I say that as I'm recording this the night before on Tuesday night. They're down 9, so they might lose. They were down by like 17 when I was checking this earlier, but the Magic are going to beat the Heat, which the Magic doesn't, they don't really matter for this exercise because it's kind of a moot point. This, like, they have too many wins for us to catch them. The Timberwolves, though, they are going to lose as well against the Clippers, which is good for, you know, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans and the Timberwolves both lose. That holds strong at Pelicans at 31 wins and the Minnesota Timberwolves at 33. And in a late game tonight, the Wizards, Lakers, ideally we'd want the Wizards to lose as well. It's kind of a toss up because the Wizards are at 30 wins, the Lakers are at 32. So, Memphis getting at 32 wins is entirely doable. So, that's kind of a toss up. I don't think it really matters who wins that game. I think if whoever wins that game, is the Grizzlies are still a winner in the standings as well. But I just wanted to give you a little update on the backwards standings as we talk about every day on this show, just to kind of give people an idea of what the Grizzlies are going to be able to do over the last stretch in the games. But coming up after the break, our conversation with Joel Melnick, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. And again, in that last segment of the show will be Zach Vandeveer from Grizz Gaming. Our conversation with him as well. Welcome back to the show. Again, every Tuesday, Wednesday, for this Lockdown Grizzly show, we have Joe Melnick, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, on with me. What's going on, Joe?
Not too much, man. Just working through my existential crisis. I apologize to everybody out there who followed me on Twitter as the game was going on Monday night against the Thunder. I've never been fired from my own Twitter account, and that happened. You know, Colin Griffith was like, dude, I'll cover it for you if you need a minute. Shout out to him. Shout out to Colin for looking out for me. It was a dark time on Monday night, but I came full circle and got what I wanted, which is a win that puts them closer to their conveying of the pick. So, I'm just kind of looking through some stuff though.
Yeah, I one thing I saw you tweet about, and I thought was very kind of the same thing that I kind of had deep down, if you know, probably didn't want to admit it, was that, like, you thought that we've had this conversation, and we had someone ask me on my show, even on the Monday mailbag, about change this summer. And I started talking about it. And then as I talked about it, I was like, you know what? Like, they might not do anything. And how, right. And I saw you tweet about that. Like, how scary is that if they decide to do nothing? I mean, they can't decide to do nothing. Something has to be changed, right?
I mean, but they can decide to do nothing. They can, and they have in the past.
Now, I hope they don't.
In fairness to Robert Pera, in the past, there's been the question of ownership. He has a much stronger hold on the organization now than he ever has. And I do think that he's not a stupid man. You don't become a multi-billionaire at his age by being stupid. Okay, you can call him a lot of different things. He's pretty clearly brilliant, at least in terms of what he does. So he is somebody who has to look at the way things are going. He has to see attendance declining. I've written about that before, the idea of, you know, apathy developing. And if there's no direction, Chris Wallace doesn't have a direction. If you want to make an argument for J.B. Bickerstaff, I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think that he should stick around either. But right. I think that you can at least make a logical argument for keeping J.B. Bickerstaff. It's hard to fire a coach after 1 year unless he's a complete and total dumpster fire.
Sure.
I'm not sure Bickerstaff is a complete and total dumpster fire. He just might be a minor dumpster fire. And he also might be saved by the health issues of the Grizzlies that they've been dealing with this season. So you can make an argument for Bickerstaff. I'll acknowledge that there's a possible lane for him to return. Chris Wallace shouldn't be back with this organization. And even if it's something, because people have been saying all over the place, you know, we've written about it in GBB, obviously Daily Memphian, Commercial Appeal, wherever you get your stuff, hopefully you do a combo because there's lots of good coverage out there. But wherever you get your Grizzlies fix, even on this show, of course, which is a terrific podcast, you need to look at it and say, whether Chris Wallace is a figurehead, whether it's a brain trust, whether he's the guy making the final call, it's almost at the point of a sacrificial lamb. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be a head that is that rolls for the situation that the Grizzlies find themselves in. And to me, if you move on from Chris Wallace and say John Hollinger, because I think it's fair to say that the Hollinger acquisition, aside from a player here or there, has also not gone as well as people thought it would. So say you get rid of those two guys, okay? And you decide to promote Chris Makris, who years ago, like 4 years ago or so, 5 years ago even, I had on an episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live when he was the general manager of the Iowa Energy, which was the former, at the time, D-League team of the Memphis Grizzlies. And I thought he was phenomenal then. And he's been a rising star in that organization ever since. Even if you promote him and you make him the general manager and you have Tayshaun Prince maybe take on a larger role in the organization, even if you do that, to me, that at least is doing something. And you're putting people in power who have had success at smaller levels, who maybe don't have as much of a voice in the room right now, that get more empowered. You know, sure. And everybody has their theory about a different person being that final voice, that final say, the para puppet master sort of thing in the background. I get that. But you have to look at the situation, and I wrote about it for the blog on Tuesday, and understand we can argue convey or don't convey until the cows come home. You can try to convince me that Cam Reddish, who's worse at finishing at the rim, I just saw this stat today, worse at finishing at the rim in college than Stanley freaking Johnson, who's arguably one of the worst finishing at the rim wings in the NBA. You can try to convince me Cam Reddish is worthy of the sixth or seventh overall pick all you want. I'm not going to agree. But I think where people can agree to disagree and kind of be united is unless something changes at the top of the organization and there is a push to establish a culture and identity that is more permanent. Because while Grit and Grind was awesome, and it was terrific, and I loved Grit and Grind as everybody else did, that was established by Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, and to a lesser extent, Mark Gasol and Mike Conley. It was because of those players and the players that were around them buying into something. That wasn't created by Chris Wallace. It wasn't. He lucked into acquiring some of those players. I think he should get credit for the Tony Allen acquisition. Zach Randolph, again, there's some benefit to what Wallace did, but he did not start Grit and Grind. And if you're going to have success as an organization, you need to have a culture in place. If you truly believe that Chris Wallace can establish that culture that can go past generations of players like the Spurs have, like New England Patriots in the NFL, then I've got a brand spanking new Oldsmobile to sell you, because that's not possible. It's not possible under this current regime. And I'm not saying, again, what makes the Spurs special is that culture. What makes the Patriots special is that culture. It's not it's not the rule, it's the exception. But you have zero shot at that developing with the current situation. So it really doesn't matter if you pick in this draft or not. What are they entering? What are they coming into? It's fun to say litmus, but what the hell does that mean? It doesn't mean anything if there is no set system in place where these players can develop and they understand what it means to be a Memphis Grizzly. That doesn't mean anything right now, and that's the main issue, regardless of whether or not they have a pick in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. First of all, I don't give Chris Wallace credit for anybody but Tony Allen. Zach Randolph was a mess. That's just taking a chance. Marc Gasol, it got luck, and he didn't draft Mike Conley. So if you want to give Chris Wallace credit, give him Chris Wallace for Tony Allen. And I'm a firm believer that Zach Randolph is the only person responsible for that culture. Without him, it doesn't work. Tony Allen's all over the place. You can't calm him down. Mike and Marc are too soft. Either way, that's another conversation. But you're right. Without one person that leads this charge, and I've said it on my show, you said it on your show, it's been said everywhere, it's been written everywhere, there is no vision. There is no direction for this team. And the whole brain trust or group think concept doesn't work. When has there ever been like, you know what? Yeah, let's have four CEOs of this company. It'll really run well. When has that ever worked? I tell you, it's never work. It doesn't work. One person has to be responsible. Yes, you can get opinions and have advisors on things about whatever it is you're doing. You can get opinions on the next move you're going to make. But at the end of the day, it has to come down to the GM making that decision. And Chris Wallace, he just doesn't want to be responsible for it. And so he has this group think and brain trust or whatever you want to call it idea. And that's what he sells to people as is everybody has their own ideas. But it's because Chris Wallace doesn't want to take the blame for it. It doesn't want to lose his job. That is the real reason. But until that changes, like you said, until that changes where we have just there is one person that is responsible, whether good or bad, there's going to be no direction to this team, and it's just going to be floating adrift until years. And so hopefully they make a change this year. Again, I'm with you. If you want to argue for JB, whatever. You and I but we'll both disagree because we've been on the same page since day one here. If you want to make a case for JB, fine, whatever. But you cannot make a case for Chris Wallace anymore. You just can't. I mean, even all the stuff that's happened, he is responsible for very little of it. And even after that, the draft mistakes after mistake, even look at Javon Carter this year. I mean, is Javon Carter, I mean, I don't know what he is, but if he can't play right now, like consistently, is he, you know, above Tyler Dorsey? I don't know. I mean, you know, all the way up until last year, there's still mistake after mistake after mistake. Again, I'm not calling Javon Carter a mistake because we still don't know what he is, but it just looks that way from the outside looking in. But I'm with you. The article you wrote today is fitting. It's perfect. If you haven't already, go check it out, grizzlybearblues.com. It's on the front page. It's good. I want to turn our attention to last night's game, which is just – I mean, this Grizzlies team is just absolute drunk. I don't understand it anymore. Every time I come on this show and say they're going to lose, they don't. And every time
they beat the Warriors. Just wait. They're going to beat the Warriors, and it's going to make no damn sense.
I'm here for it. I'm all here for it. I'll be there. I can't wait for them to beat the Warriors. But last night in particular, we saw the best versions of DeLon Wright, Bruno Caboclo, and Tyler Dorsey. Would you agree? Like that's like you don't have you. Like, you don't need those guys to be that every single night next year, role player-wise, but you do need them to be consistent. And, like, that's the best version of DeLon Wright, driving the basketball, dishing out assists, and creating chances for other people and also scoring in the paint.
I think that if you're looking for consistency, like, which player can do that the most consistently, it's DeLon Wright. And the reason I say it's DeLon Wright isn't just because I predicted that he would be good. And I rarely get right at things, so I'm going to take complete and total credit for his success. But it's not just that he is showing that he is what Memphis hoped he would be. And that's, at worst, arguably, the best backup point guard, backup combo guard the team has had in a very, very, very long time. And at best, a potential starter, either alongside Mike Conley or at the point if Conley departs via trade this summer. I think that he is showing that he is at least capable of that. Maybe not being a starter on a 50-win team, but I think that he's showing that he can compete. And that's one of the best parts about it. I also think that you need to be patient with Tyler Dorsey. I think Tyler is seeing opportunity and making the most of it. I think, and I talked about this on the Gary Parrish show a week or two ago, part of the way that teams are struggling with the Grizzlies, I think, right now, is they don't have a scouting report. It's not like Tyler Dorsey played a ton of minutes for the Atlanta Hawks. Like, people don't really know what this guy can do well, and they don't necessarily take him seriously because he spent more time with the Hustle than he has with the Grizzlies. Tyler Dorsey wouldn't be playing if there weren't seven rotation players out on the injury report. Sure. So I think that with Tyler, a bit of pause is required. I don't want to hate on him. I think he's definitely proven he's an NBA player. Hopefully he sticks around on the roster. He's young. He and Dylan Brooks have a relationship. It'd be fun to watch those two play together, going back to their University of Oregon days. So I don't want to completely, be depressing when it comes to Dorsey, but I think Wright is more likely to be sustainable. And to be honest with you, I think Bruno Caboclo is more likely to be sustainable. This is the reason you sign him. This is why, because he can do these things and develop, and you can see, there was, I think, I forget the name of the game off the top of my head, But there was a game a few weeks ago where I tweeted out, he looks disinterested. Like, he looks bored.
Right.
He looks like he's not invested. But that was the exact opposite on Monday night. He was bought in. He was attacking the rim. He was converting threes. He was a force defensively as well. He had a strong presence on that end of the floor, too. Because make no mistake, even more than the scoring that the Grizzlies did, the fact that the Thunder star struggled so mightily is a major reason why that team won that game. And it's easy to write it off as just an off night for Westbrook and George. I don't think that's entirely fair. I think that it's a night where the idea that you hang your hat on the defensive end at times was indeed present for Bickerstaff and his crew. So, and Caboclo is a big piece of that. So you look at what they can do in terms of youth, in terms of the wing moving forward. I like what they did with Caboclo. I think that's a very smart signing. And I'm not saying he's going to do that against the Warriors, or he may not even do it the rest of the season. But to me, he has the physical tools, the raw ability to where he can develop to something more similar to that, whereas a Tyler Dorsey kind of feels like, I don't want to say flash in the pan because that sounds disrespectful, but I think his has more to do with a lack of familiarity than Bruno's, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, I guess what I mean is that, you know, this game is representative of what, like, the best thing they could be as each individual player. Is Tyler Dorsey shooting the ball from three, Bruno Caboclo being athletic, and DeLon Wright really just distributing the ball. Like, that is ideally the best version of those guys. Whether they're going to do it or not is totally remains to be seen. And again, I refuse to wait to be excited about Tyler Dorsey. I refuse to do it. So I'm going to be excited about it. And until I'm proven wrong, he's better than DeLon Wright. I'm just kidding.
It's important, you know, to point out that he is indeed, we can agree on this, Mark, he is indeed better than Shelvin Mack.
Shelvin Mack. And for what reason the Hawks gave away Tyler Dorsey, I'll never know. That was weird. But hey, whatever. You know, they got Trae Young, and they probably felt like they probably didn't need him, and that's okay. And so hopefully Tyler Dorsey is able to do something, because if you get those guys, you know, even if they're not, you know, like I said, they're not the best versions of themselves, but with they're consistently half of those production, you know, like, you could use a really good backup point guard with DeLon Wright as a backup combo guard, or, you know, and Bruno playing minutes as well. I mean, those are definitely things that could happen. Again, there's a long way to go on all those players. And so there's only time is really going to tell. And I'd wish they had some more games this year so we could figure it out, but they don't. So Grizzlies have a few more games this year, about half and half against playoff teams and against teams that are bad. Where are you on conveying? Do you care anymore? Because I don't at this point, I don't really care. I just want to get it over with, because, you know, I'm secretly just hoping for Zion Williamson, and just that's all I'm hoping for at this moment. But yeah, I think at this point it doesn't. I don't know if it really matters whether you finish 8th, 9th, or 10th. I think you have an equal shot to going down or moving up. But what says you?
I want to be 9th. I want to be 9th because it essentially guarantees that you're either going to land in the top four, which gives you a chance at Zion, Barrett, right, Morant, or, you know, take your pick of Jarrett Culver, hopefully not Cam Reddish, but Darius Garland, DeAndre Hunter, whatever your flavor is. If you're in that top four, you know, I'm pretty hard on Jarrett Culver, but people more and more that are smarter than me really like him. So maybe I need to warm up to that. You have a shot at the top four still, obviously, if you're at 9. And other than that, you're probably going to convey the pick. And to me, that's where I want to be. If you're 8th, that makes it a little bit better odds to get into that top four, but it also results in a little bit worse sweat, you know, in terms of you're hoping somebody jumps up in front and knocks you back a spot. So that makes you a little bit more intense in terms of stress on lottery night. So I can maybe understand that argument if you're into gambling and you're feeling lucky, in Clint Eastwood's voice, Dirty Harry. but in terms of me, I want them to be 9th because that gives them the best chance to both guarantee that they convey the pick or land in the top four and get a player that, theoretically speaking, should be able to contribute. I'm worried about them being 6th or 7th. That's what I really don't want.
That's the worst. That's the worst.
Because that's when you get into Cam Reddish territory. Yeah. That's when you get into trying to talk yourself into, I don't even know his name off the top of my head, but the center from
Vince Hunter?
From Texas.
Is it Hunter?
No, there's a center. Yeah, I think so. Hunter is the wing from UVA.
Yeah, DeAndre Hunter's a Virginia guy.
I like him. I think he's going to be a good NBA player, but I don't think he's going to be a star. You know, of all the names that we've just mentioned, Darius Miller is probably the one that's most likely to be a star, but I think it's fair to, you know, warn people against rising draft stock when the guy hasn't played in months due to injury.
Sure.
You know, are you picking a guy who is indeed that good, or are you drafting based off the idea of what you think he might be and you haven't seen it? You know, that's certainly something that brings its own risk with it. So I would want to be ninth. That's still my goal. I still want them to convey. And I'm a man of my word. I said everywhere when the season began, if they convey the pick, I will call it a successful season. And I still think that that is fair to say, because this team, it was probably always unrealistic to put them as a playoff team, because when we talked about it, and I remember talking about it with you, we would always preface it with saying a lot has to go right.
Yeah.
And obviously those things didn't go right. And because of that, they're not a playoff team. So if you're able to convey the pick, that to me is a successful season, because it clears your ledger. It gives you an opening, if you're para, to completely blow up your front office and make some changes. And now, if you're bad, you get to benefit from that. If you are the number one overall bad team in the NBA in 2020, you get the, you know, you will at least have a top four pick in a draft that, theoretically speaking, is at worst the same as this. Now, I hear some people saying next year's draft is worse. I don't know how that's possible, unless you're just ranking Zion that highly. I struggle with people saying next year's draft is worse.
We're sitting here talking about the fifth, possibly the fifth pick of draft. I don't even know who it is. That's right. The problem. Like, we don't even, like, I don't even know who these guys are. At the top, sure. 5, 6, and 7 in normal years, you just know who you could rattle off 8 guys that you've heard, you know, just passingly heard of in college basketball and go, yeah, that guy's a top 10 pick. And this year, you get past 3 and you're like, I don't know. It's whatever. Like, that's the problem.
You've got somebody like Brandon Clark out at Gonzaga, who's a really good player, but he's going to be 23 when the season starts.
Sure.
Like, he's just, for an NBA rookie, he's old. And obviously, Malcolm Brogdon has shown the capacity to be a success in that kind of situation. But at the same time, Malcolm Brogdon was a second-round pick. You're talking about taking somebody at 8 or 9 overall. I don't know. And again, somebody like Brandon Clark makes sense for Boston. You know, Boston's probably licking their chops. Same thing with Brooklyn. I think there's some sneaky depth in this draft. Where I get nervous is at 6 and 7, where you're reaching for people. If you're taking Nazir Little at 15 overall, if you're Brooklyn, I'd be stoked. Like, that's a good use of a pick on a guy who could be a good pro, and you're not necessarily, you know, swinging for the fence with a lottery selection. So that's where I'm at, Mark, is I want that pick to be conveyed so that you can benefit if you're bad in the future. If an opportunity comes around for a trade for somebody like Bradley Beal, I don't think they'll trade him. But that type of player, a team's trying to be bad or trying to be worse and clear their cap ledger, you're trying to be good, it gives you more flexibility. And I do believe, credit to whoever's running this Grizzlies front office, that was one of their goals at the trade deadline, was to create more flexibility for themselves, whether it's the Avery Bradley contract, obviously all the different options on Valanciunas and Wright and restricted free agency. There's lots of moving pieces moving forward with what this roster is going to look like, and some of that is under the control of the team. So it gives them a chance to be more flexible with what that vision of whatever comes next will be. But as we said earlier in this show, it really doesn't matter unless the person pulling the strings of the day-to-day operations is actually helping set up what it means to be a Grizzly.
Yeah, no, I think if you landed that 6 or 7, even the 8 spot, I'm doing everything I can to try to get out of it. I'm looking for any trade possible to either move back. Like you said, I wouldn't mind taking some of those guys at 13 or 14, 15. But you know, like 6 or 7 and 8, it's just too high. I would do everything I could to get out of the pick, personally. That would be what I would try to do. And maybe recruit some of those losses that you've given away to people. So, but anyway, Joe Mullinex, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, man, I appreciate you taking the time out to talk with me again this week. Let's do it again next week.
I'm looking forward to it already. Thank you, Mark.
All right, man.
So where are you from?
I'm from Aurora, Ohio. It's like 30 minutes away from Cleveland. Small town.
Mm-hmm. So I've never heard of it.
I mean, it's just a small town. I've lived in Sugar Falls, and then my mom lives in Indianapolis, so I've lived in Indianapolis for a little bit too. So I've lived kind of like everywhere from Indianapolis to Ohio.
Okay. This is your first year to league, or
Yes, correct.
So what's that like going from playing 2K brand, you know, just on Twitch or whatever, then now you're in Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because, like, I was in high school last year. I just graduated, so I had to make a decision if I want to go for the league or go to college, because I wanted as much time as possible to go to the league or go for the league to, like, perfect my game and everything. So, I mean, I took off college. My parents let me after I won $1,000 Cavs Legion tournament. So I won $1,000 there. They're like, okay, well, this is something you can do. And then ever since then, had a great combine, had a great competitive scene this year, because there's a comp scene in Pro-Am, which everyone plays in. So I played in that, and we made a good run and stuff. So I think that really helped me out a lot.
How do you convince your parents that college has got to wait?
I mean, this is something I wanted to do, and this is one of my dreams. So they were like, okay. I mean, just go for it. I mean, I'm only 19, so they're like, okay, if you just take 1 year, we're 1 year off, you don't make it, then you go to college. But if you make it, then, you know, it's something you can do in the future.
So how did you get into gaming?
I would say when I was like 10 or 11, I was playing like rec basketball, and me and my friends would go to one of their houses or my house, and we would put in NBA 2K11, and we just play 2K. We put in our players and stuff, and we'd actually like create our own team and our roster for the rec basketball team I played for. So we all like, so if I was a 3-point shooter, I'd have a high 3-point rating, that we'll see what our ratings are and stuff. So I was always like a high 80 overall, because I was like, I was a shooter, I wasn't really like a slasher or anything. So I was just really good at shooting the ball, so they always put me as like that pure sharp role. So I just been playing ever since then, and then got really into the competitive scene of 2K and 2K18, and just took off from there.
Favorite video game of all time?
That's a tough one. I would probably have to say NBA 2K11 because of crew mode. Crew mode was one of my favorite modes ever. They took it out in 2K12. Because there was a lot of, like, modding and stuff that you can make. You can make, like, 9-foot players and stuff. Yeah. So it was, like, glitching out the game. So they're like, okay, we don't know how to stop it. So they took it out of the game until 2K16, which was, like, next gen. So they knew how to fix that, and there's no mods ever since then. So they brought back crew mode then. So
okay. If you're not playing 2K with the guys, is there a game that you play?
Right now I'm playing Division 2, which just came out, like, a week ago, and then Apex Legends. I've been playing a lot with my friends from home, or just some of the guys here. All
right. If you're not playing video games, what are you doing? Anything?
I'm playing basketball. Yep. There's a YMCA here. Toxic actually just went over to there yesterday. I was taking a nap because my sleep schedule's like messed up right now. So I'll be going there soon and getting a pass there to go hoop.
I guess that's... Playing basketball, have you always just been a basketball fan? Is that why you're in 2K? Or is this
I played high school basketball. I played high school baseball. I played baseball more than basketball, but there was nothing, you know, for baseball. There was no, like, league or anything. They don't have an esports franchise. So I play a little bit MLB The Show on PS4, but I was mainly Xbox, so they don't have an MLB game on Xbox. So I just really stuck with basketball and 2K. I mean, there's NBA Live, but... No one really plays NBA Live because 2K is just superior to that. So, I loved baseball. That was probably my first love for sports. And then basketball, I quit baseball my freshman year. I just continued playing basketball. So,
who's your favorite NBA player right now?
I would say Chetty Osmond, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Really?
Yeah.
That's your favorite player?
Yes. Yes, I'm a big Cleveland Cavaliers fan.
Nice.
So, I mean, we got Colin Sexton, we got Chetty Osmond. They're basically the face of the franchise now, other than Kevin Love. But we'll see if he gets traded or not. Hopefully he doesn't. And then hopefully we get Zion in the draft. But
Ben and Cass fan, thoughts on LeBron James? Are you a lover or a hater?
I'm a lover. He brought us a championship, so I can't hate him. I mean, he's doing a business decision going to Lakers. They might get a star player. Who knows? But I'll always love him because he brought the city a championship. So,
Nice. You didn't burn any jerseys, did you?
No.
No? You know, okay, that's good.
Still got my small cast jerseys, yeah. I had a bunch of them.
I mean, even that Lakers decision now doesn't look so great.
Nope.
I mean, they are awful. They are awful. So you're obviously a Cleveland fan.
Yep.
Basketball-wise, is there a player in 2K? Is there a player that you try to model your game after in 2K in the league?
Yeah, I would probably say Kyrie Irving. Because of how he dribbles the basketball. I'm probably one of the best dribblers on the game. And just scoring the basketball, he's one of the best scorers as well. So I think we model our games pretty similar, virtually and then on the court.
And your point guard, what? How do you choose a position? How do you choose point guard? Why choose point guard?
I was always a point guard in high school or middle school, AAU, played a lot of AAU too. So I was always playing point guard, so I always wanted to go with my position. So that's why I always picked it.
I guess what's the most competitive position in 2K right now? Like, who are there? Is it even, or is there some players that are just very, very top heavy?
It's more so even with this build, because this build compared to the retail version is completely different. This is made for the eSport. So it was the same thing kind of last year. I was on the Cavs practice squad last year for the Cavs Legion. So I practiced a lot on that build. So it's totally different this year. Shooting's a lot easier, but also defense is really hard. So it kind of is kind of balanced, but pure sharpshooters, as if you've ever seen J-Rod play, he's averaging like 25-30 a game. And those pure sharps can shoot from anywhere. I mean, it's just Steph Curry.
When you say defense is harder, you mean like
passing lanes?
You mean
crazy.
Playing defense or?
No, so going against the defense is a lot harder because passing lane steals are crazy. You can get a passing lane steal from half court and somebody's wide open in the corner. You can literally just steal it out of the hands. It's crazy.
So is it much harder to drive on this build?
I mean, with pure lockdowns, there's one pure lockdown basically on every team. So that's usually guarding the my position. So I would kind of have to give the ball to J-Rod a little bit to work because he doesn't have a pure lockdown on him. It's a lot easier for him to shoot. So they have to really just pick their poison for me or J-Rod to attack the hoop and just score. So.
Okay. What's your favorite food? Or have you been to anything? I'm sure they haven't taken you anywhere yet in Memphis, but so far.
Rendezvous is actually really good. So I had their barbecue nachos.
Yeah.
That was really good. So I would say that's probably my favorite food here so far.
Yeah. I mean, that's been very short. It's been a week.
Yeah.
So.
I'll probably try more food as we.
We'll revisit that in the middle of the season. So is there a point, I guess, in high school where you realized that? Or I guess what point was it when you realized that you can get paid to do this? Like this is a real thing that you can make a career out of.
I mean, I watched the league last year. I was always part of the league. I watched the Cavs a lot because I practiced with them. So it was really cool just to watch the league. I'm like, okay, you know, I have the skill for this. I wasn't eligible last year. So being eligible this year, I wanted to go for it. And, you know, I was just fortunate to make it.
Is there a time, like, even younger than last year that you knew, like, or you thought, like, this might be real, that could be a real thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I watched FaZe. There's, like, FaZe Optic. They're, like, one of the two most popular, like, brands out there for esports. They made their living from Call of Duty. And now they do a lot of YouTube, and they make a bunch of money from YouTube. So, like, knowing how, like, the Call of Duty scene kind of, like, made how, like, people can get paid for esports. And then with the 2K League came up, and, you know, you see that you can play professionally and for money. Is something that like I always wanted to do, especially one of the best games I play. So,
when Vandy's on the court for Grizz Gaming, what can people expect?
You see a lot of great passes, a lot of scoring. Came into the draft as one of the best scoring guards in the game, but as well have the IQ to make the right play. So, I think you know you're going to see a mixture of you know great passing, but as well great scoring.
Thanks again to Joe Monick, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, and also thanks to Zach from Grizz Gaming and all the folks at Grizz Gaming for letting me come by and talk to those guys. It was really cool. Again, I keep saying that it's really cool, but I really appreciate it. It's very insightful just to see how things just work, and they've kind of let me see that process and how they you know do stuff and practice and all this stuff. So and how they're gonna set up those with other teams. It's very cool. Again, they start their first game April the 3rd. I believe it's at 4 o'clock against the T-Wolves. So look for that. It'll be on Twitch just like they were last year as well. But if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, please do so. Subscribe in iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. It's on every single platform. If you want to be a featured sponsor on this show, please email me at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. We have a lot of great rates. We'd love to have you as a sponsor. If you're not following me on Twitter, please do so at @king_producer or follow the show at Locked On Grizz. That's where we will continue the conversation after the show. If you still don't know where to go after all that, just go to lockedongrizzlies.com.